They do it late at night when their parents are asleep. They do it in restaurants and while crossing busy streets. They do it in the classroom with their hands behind their back. They do it so much their thumbs hurt. That was the opening to a New York Times article recently about texting. Dr. Michael Lax is a professor in family medicine and the medical director of the Occupational Health Clinical Center at Upstate. We've asked him to help us sort out the potential problems this new apparent addiction has on kids and their families. Good morning, Dr. Lax.
Good morning.
Let's start by explaining what texting is.
Well, texting is you...
You use your cell phone.
Right. Use your cell phone to send messages that are typed with your, usually with your thumbs.
Right, right. So instead of speaking into the phone, mostly kids, but adults as well, are using their phones in those keypads.
That's right.
Yep. And for a while there, it seemed like you only had the 9 numbers and they had to put the alphabet on the numbers, much like they do on a telephone. But now we see the phones that have entire keypads on them.
That's right. And, you know, I'm amazed. I watched my daughter do it, and she is so fast.
Yes.
And I've tried it, and it's like, I can't even get my fingers on the right keys.
I know. My fingers are way too fat, and my nails are way too long. But let's talk about it, because it is creating some problems, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I told my daughter yesterday, I said, you got to listen to this radio program, because I'm going to go on and sound like an old fogey talking about this. But, I mean, for a while, you know, people have been concerned about the physical aspect, which is the you know, the use of the thumbs mainly to do it, and what the short-term and long-term effects of that are, because you know, pretty much anything you do like that repetitively on a keyboard carries, I think, some risk of problems, either short-term or maybe even long-term.
Well, I look at the kids mostly, and I've texted, and it works out pretty well, but they grip this tiny little thing, and then they're using their thumbs in this very confined space, and they're sending these messages back and forth, and the numbers here are incredible. They said, according to Nielsen, American teenagers sent and received an average of 2,272 text messages per month in the fourth quarter of 2008. That's astounding.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. And when you watch the kids, I mean, you see how they do it. And it's going on all the time, you know. And I thought what was interesting about that article was not just that it mentioned the physical aspects, but also sort of what the sort of consequences may be mental health-wise and culturally, too, which I think may actually be more profound than the direct thumb things.
Well, let's cut to those in a minute. Let's talk about the physical first, because okay. I'm concerned that if these kids are doing this repetitive stress, is this going to lead to maybe more arthritis down the road when they're adults? You're the person who works in occupational health. Tell us what the long-term ramifications could be.
Well, my bet is that, you know, I think even the article mentioned that kids are already experiencing thumb problems, mostly probably tendonitis and soft tissue issues with their thumbs, and probably it'll have a name, you know, texting thumb.
Probably.
Or if it doesn't already. But I think, yeah, long-term, that's a concern, is what's the long-term impact going to be on the joints, and will arthritis increase as a result? And I think it's reasonable to think that, yeah, it could be a risk for that.
It could be. So perhaps they'll come along with some kind of adaptation that can be used so that these kids won't get these repetitive stress. Maybe like their voices. But in any case, now let's talk about some of the mental and emotional, because the article did mention there are some real, they said, during adolescence, this is the time that kids are supposed to be coming independent and breaking away from their parents, and yet they find that an awful lot of these text messages are going back and forth with mom. Should I buy the red shoes or the blue shoes?
Yeah, right. I think it's also not with both the parents and with their comrades,
their circle of friends.
Uh-huh. It's a constant interruption. I mean, the kids are always, basically, they're like always on call, and mm-hmm. so they're always ready to receive a text or send a text. And so the ability to sort of sit and think and sort of get deeply into something, including sleep, is always sort of potentially interrupted. And so I think that raises questions about sort of how, you know, what's going to happen in terms of, you know, sort of brain functioning, the way kids think, the way kids do things mentally.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's when you say they're always on, I mean, literally, even in the classrooms, I mean, how do you stop, unless you take phones away, when you take away the instrument, then they're in class, they're not paying attention in class, so they're missing out on some of their schoolwork. They're missing out on their sleep, because these things are going off all night long. And yes, parents have to step up to the plate and make sure that at least when the kids are home, they're regulating some of it. Otherwise, I can't even imagine what attention spans are going to evolve to if kids don't learn to focus on their work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a constant, I look at it sort of like an arms race. It's sort of like, you know, the parents or the teachers think of some way to try and control it. The kids figure out some way to get around
yes.
it. Then the parents come back with some further control measures. So yeah, I mean, you watch them and we say, you know, you can't do this at the dinner table while we're eating,
right?
For example.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, they got the phone with them. And then every once, you know, occasionally when they think they're not looking, they're like, you know, they got their hands under the table doing it.
Texting anyway.
And the article mentioned that the teachers, you know, have a really hard time controlling this
yes.
in the classroom. And so what's the impact on, you know, learning and paying attention and all that?
Exactly. And then they find the same thing like in business meetings, you know, where big important decisions are being made and people
right.
are over there texting instead. So it really is something, and I agree with you, it's something that they're going to have to look at regulating, something they're going to have to look at some kind of alternative to make sure that even though it's a great tool, and it can be a great tool, that there are going to somehow be ways of diminishing the effect on other parts of their lives. Well, Dr. Michael Axe, thank you so much for coming by this morning. We'll see what texting evolves to.
Right. Thanks.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Vacation veg-out time? Bah! Give me more work! Hello, dear listeners. You know, whenever I'm at work and somebody goes off on vacation, I think, I can't go on vacation now. I've got too much to do. And whenever I wrench myself away from the office and head out for vacation, I find myself thinking, boy, I should do more of this. I love vacation. You know, one of the most amazing studies I've ever heard of was by a psychologist whose name I can't pronounce, let alone spell. It's something like Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. It's on our website, along with his book title called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. Anyway, we'll call him Dr. Zick. What Dr. Zick did was ask people to carry a beeper. He beeped them anytime, day or night. When the beeper beeped, they wrote down what they were doing and how good they felt at that very moment. He got more than 400,000 responses. So when were people the happiest? Turns out us human beings are most relaxed and happy when we're eating. And sex is pretty fun, too. But the really big surprise is that we're happier when we're working productively towards some goal we value than when we're doing mindless stuff like watching TV or just sitting on a beach vegging out. So it's not whether we're on vacation or working that makes the difference, or whether we're making money doing it. It's whether we're throwing ourselves into an activity with our heart and soul, something we value that takes all of our skills, something we get totally caught up doing, and where we get a sense of whether we're succeeding and reaching our goal. So I just realized that the trouble I have going on vacation is because I love my work so much, and I keep focusing more and more of my energy on doing more and more of what I'm good at, and thus what I love to do, whether I'm sitting at my desk writing my checkup from the neck up, working with clients so they can have more of the life they want, teaching my students to do the same things for themselves and for their clients, or if I'm on vacation, throwing myself into having a great time with my wife and kids, or biking and running myself to get just that little bit faster every week. So, dear listeners, don't tell my boss this, but even when I'm not on vacation, I do a lot of what I do for free, just for the flow of it. This is Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.